Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up podcast. I'm Mark Dick. I'm your host. This is my show. I'm really glad that you're listening this week. This is the podcast about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and all the wonderful people that work so hard to make the good stuff and get it out in the hands of the people in their communities. So how are you? How's things? How's March treating you? Spring has finally arrived here in Saskatchewan. It is glorious and warm, and about 90% of the snow is melted, and my backyard is dried up, and I am able to bake outdoors again without getting feet full of mud or freezing my hands. So that's a good thing. I'm happy for that. In fact, last weekend, it almost got a little too warm in the garage. I had to turn the furnace down. That's how nice it was. So hooray for that. I hope if you're living in the north of the world, I hope that your spring is coming to where you live. And if you're living in the south of the world, I sure hope summer is hanging on a little bit longer. So there you go. Let's see, what else should we talk about? Thank you so much to the folks that emailed me last week. About last week's show with Sarah Rossi, meant a lot. I'm glad you liked the talk, and I'm very glad that you liked the monologue at the front. So thank you for that. I'll keep speaking my truth. I'm glad that some of what I say is resonating with you. So thank you. What else to share this week? Let's see. I'm reading a new book by a fellow named James Victori. Now, James is a graphic artist. He makes posters, and he makes posters that are works of art and are very effective messages out into the world, and sometimes subversive messages, which I like. And the name of his book is called Feck Perfection. And thank goodness that's what it's called and not the other way around, because I would have to put an explicit tag on this episode otherwise. The subtitle is Dangerous Ideas on the Business of Life. And I have to say, I absolutely love this book. It's rather brief, it's snappy, it's punchy, and it's inspiring. And I just wanted to talk about one of his pronouncements very early in the book, and talking about, you know, living a creative life. And I think when you're a baker and when you're out on your own making a business out of a bakery, especially in this day and age, you are a creative person, without a doubt. So I think this applies to you. And it's his line is to have a damn opinion. If you're going to make some art, if you're going to make some good bread, if you're going to build a bakery for the ages, or a bakery that truly serves your community, you need to have an opinion. And thankfully, I have an opinion, which if you've been listening to these episodes, you're starting to get a sense of what my opinions are. But anyways, you know, my opinions, it's number one is feed the people. That's why we're here. As beautiful of products that we make, as wholesome and as nourishing and as gorgeous our sourdough loaves or our birthday cakes or our morning pastries are, we're doing it to feed the people, and there is nothing better than this gorgeous thing that we've made getting gobbled up by hungry folks and seeing the joy that that good food gives to them. And so first and foremost, in my mind, we are here to feed people, and I am so grateful that that's what you all are doing out in the world. We make good food. That's another opinion that I have, that I think is a very strongly held opinion. The types of folks that I like talking to are looking at quantity and quality. You can't always use the very best ingredients. You can't always eat caviar. You can't always have fresh milled ancient grains. But when you can, you make it and you share it with people. And even if you're making burger buns for folks, you're making high quality, good burger buns, you know, give them the good stuff, whatever it is. And there is nothing wrong with a white flour baguette. There's nothing wrong with a squishy burger bun, but when you're making it with good ingredients, it's all good. So there you go. Another strongly held opinion that I have is that we're also here to make a living or make a career of it. whether we're the owners or whether we're the bakers, we're here to make a living. So it shouldn't be a choice of living in poverty just in order to feed people. And that's not an easy equation. And a lot of the shows on this podcast have been about how to make that equation a little bit better and how to share information so we can all make a good living. Like, let's face it, you know, we're not going to be living in mansions and we're not going to be buying yachts or anything like that. Although that guy from Cake Boss seems to live in a pretty big house, but I'm not sure what goes on there. I don't understand that level of baking. But what I mean by this is, you know, we're measuring our success differently than maybe folks in traditional businesses. You know, if you go to university and you get yourself a business degree and you get a job as an accountant at a corporation somewhere and you're making a salary and, you know, you're on a certain path. Maybe we're not on that same path as bakers, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't be able to make a living doing what we're doing. And it's going to be difficult sometimes. And our successes are going to be a mix of money and connection with people and that feeling that you're doing good in the community. The same way that James in his book talks about a life of an artist. It's like, you know, when you're making posters for a living and you're making art as a living, you're going to live differently than if you were that, you know, stereotypical accountant or administrative assistant or, you know, executive assistant to the president, right? But accept it, but get paid for your work, right? And that's the thing. And that's one of the reasons I've been talking with a lot of working bakers over the last few weeks is to make sure that, you know, we understand how they are making a living. Are they making a living? What needs to change so they can make a living? You know, that kind of a thing. Because we're supposed to feed people and feed ourselves. Sound fair? You know, and then the last opinion that I noted down that's a very strongly held opinion is that we are better together. And that is one of the amazing things about bakers that has blown my mind ever since the first time I met another baker, is that by and large, we are the most generous folks I've ever met, you know, and we are better together, sharing our ideas, sharing our stories, sharing what works, what doesn't work, from production schedules to profit and loss statements, you know, from where to source good ingredients to where to find high quality employees, you know, from marketing to the basics of fermentation. Bakers share what they've learned with other people, and that's an amazing thing. And so, you know, those four things, you know, feed the people, make good food, make a living, and we are better together is really that's the component parts of this idea of making the good stuff and bringing it to the people. And with that in mind, I got a really interesting email from a friend of mine, Matt, an internet friend through the Bread Bakers Guild, just talking about different ways that we can get together and connect together. The podcast is one way, but it's one way, but it's also one way. You know, I talk and I share conversations and then we can swap some emails back and forth. But how can we connect up a little bit more and pursue these topics in a little bit more depth? And so that's something that I've been thinking about. I don't have any quick answers, but I am working on a few things to try and keep the conversations going and make them even more two-way and more collaborative. So stay tuned for that. And by all means, reach out and share your ideas if you have them on how we can connect up a little bit more. Because the more that we connect and share with each other and learn from each other, the better off we're all going to be. So that's my rant or monologue or what have you for this week. Check out that book again. I'm going to say it one more time. Hopefully I get it right. Feck Perfection by James Victorii. Check it out on, you know, I don't know, Amazon or or go to the library. That's where I got it from. I'm sorry, James. But anyways, this week on the show, it's not just me yakking. I have an amazing conversation with a young baker who is now in England. Her name is Sheena Howdell, and Sheena's from Canada. She's baked in the prairies in the west of Canada, and now she's over in the UK traveling around, working at different bakeries there and expanding her skills and seeing the world and meeting some amazing people all at the same time. And this is someone that I've wanted to talk to for a while, ever since I realized that she'd left Saskatoon, which is where I first met her. And then I was following her on Instagram and said, man, what are all these pictures from England all about and Scotland and that kind of thing? And so I reached out and said, you know, we need to talk. What's going on with you? And so we had a really good chat. And, you know, if you are a working baker and are thinking, you know, how am I going to expand what I know and expand my skills and see a bit of the world? You know, you could do a lot worse than following the path that Sheena's on. From the sounds of it, it's not very easy, but it's doable and it's rewarding. But hey, that's just my opinion. Find out for yourself by listening on. Here's the chat with Sheena Howdell, somewhere in the United Kingdom. So where are you right now?
So currently I'm living in a town called Bury St. Edmunds. It's okay. In Suffolk, just north of London.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I'm working at a bakery called Worcester's Bakery for a guy named Will Worcester, and it's been really good so far. So that's where I, like, in the world, that's where I am.
Yeah. And how long have you been at this place?
Just over 3 months now, I think it is.
Oh, okay.
Maybe almost four.
Cool.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, let's kind of talk this through in a bit of order, but you're already in a different spot than I thought you were. So that's great. So
my family can't even keep up where I am at this point. So
that's awesome.
I'm not surprised. Yeah, no, it's been really good though.
And you're definitely the first person from the UK that I've talked to, or the first person in the UK because you're Canadian. So. But that's okay.
That's all right. No, well, yeah. I'm sure, you know what, if you want some emails, let me know and I'll send you some people.
I'll reach out to you before. And I've had a couple of folks email me saying, hey, you should talk to this guy over in England and stuff. But
yeah, for sure.
But so where are you from originally, Sheena?
I was born and raised in Red Deer, Alberta.
Right. Yes. I remember you telling me this once. Yeah. Okay. And so when you... So you're growing up in Red Deer and stuff. Was baking part of what you did then?
It was. Well, my grandma she had 11 children.
Oh, wow.
On my dad's side. And so money was tight and they were farmers. And so she made a lot of their food. And so she, like, it started there. Mm-hmm. And in high school and middle school, I was really lucky and I went to schools that had really good home economics programs and really very good cool. teachers.
Yeah.
And I did the classes over again. Like, I didn't have to do them again, but you were allowed to. And I just loved them so much. I would repeat them. Ah. And then, I still got credit for it. So I'll take it.
Awesome.
I just had really passionate teachers and they were really good. And I worked in the school cafeteria as part of my credits in grade 11 and 12. And there was actually Mr. Chef Kine and his wife, Betty, ran it. And Betty, there was a few thousand students at that school and Betty would hand make the buns.
Wow.
I remember even then thinking, this is crazy. Like, they're high school students. They won't know the difference between a bun out of a bag and a bun that you're rounding by hand. And she would do it. And she was just the nicest lady. And so that's kind of where it all started for me, like after my grandma, the industrial side of it.
Right. And then from high school, you went on to baking school, didn't you?
No, actually, I didn't.
No,
I had no, no, it's a twist, plot twist.
Yeah.
I had thought that it was kind of daunting. I was going to go to SAIT, the Southern Institute of Technology, Southern Alberta Institute of Technology, and do cooking, actually, like learn to be a chef. And then I kind of like got cold feet because I thought, if I learn to be a chef, it's like, it's a trade. And when you're 18 years old, going into a trade just feels like that's what you're going to have to do forever.
Right.
And so I panicked a little bit and I took a gap year. I took a year off.
Okay.
And I decided to get a Bachelor of Arts degree in English.
Ah.
So I went ahead and I did that.
And where did you do that at?
I did my first 2 years at Red Deer College. And then I did my last 2 years at the University of Calgary.
Oh, okay.
Cool. Yeah.
So you, so, and what did you do in your gap year?
I worked at a bookstore because I just love books and I love reading. So it worked out really well.
Cool.
Yeah. So I finished that and I went into, I just got a job from a friend in property management and I did that for 3 years.
Really?
And wasn't super passionate about it.
Okay.
So then I kind of, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say like I can relate to maybe property management isn't the thing for you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's only so much joy you can get about writing a letter about picking up your dog poop, you know? Yeah. There's like, there's, it's, it ends really quickly. So.
So from property management, what was next for you?
Well, right towards the end of working there, I did a trip to Australia, New Zealand, South Korea, and Thailand.
Oh, wow.
I was going for a wedding in Australia. That was where it started. Mm-hmm. And I was in New Zealand in Queenstown. And I just remember having this weird moment. And I was in a bakery just getting breakfast with somebody I had met that morning at a farmer's market.
Yeah.
And we went in and I just got this sandwich and I looked at the people behind the counter and I don't even think it was that like, it wasn't a life-changing bakery, but I just remember looking at them and they were laughing about something and there were mixers going and I just, the smells and all the stuff behind the counter. And I just thought, I feel more at home here in this shop in the middle of a country that's foreign to me than I do working in this property management business.
Wow.
And so I just thought like, I need to go back to this. And I kind of decided then and there, and I got home from that trip and mentioned it to my parents that I was thinking about going to school for baking. And they're awesome. They're super supportive. So they were like, do it.
Oh man, that's great. That's,
yeah.
That's so cool to get that feeling, you know, that it's like, what is this place? Why is it doing this to me? You know?
Oh, for sure. For sure. And I tend to follow my gut. So.
Yeah.
So it was great.
Yeah. And so then you went to baking school?
Yeah. So
okay.
That's when I found Vancouver Island University.
Right on.
And you had to kind of write a letter about why you wanted to go and do a phone interview with the head of the baking program, Martin Barnett, who is just a complete legend in my eyes. So he's great. So
yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah. So he let me in luckily. And I thought I was going to go, I didn't have great plans about bread. To be honest, I thought I was going to go and do cakes or come out of it working in a bakery somehow.
Right.
And working with my hands and producing something.
Right.
But I never thought that I would be doing bread. And then, so when you go to the school, you kind of get put on stations.
Right. Okay.
And the school has an Alan Scott wood-fired oven.
Oh, cool.
Outside of it. Yeah. And it just looks so big and so intimidating, but Martin kind of looked at me and I was one of the older students there. There's a lot of kids coming right out of high school and it was 95% girls. And somehow was like, you'll be okay on the oven. So yeah, he just seemed to know. And so I got put on the wood-fired oven the first week with my group and I loved it. I was just hooked.
Oh, that's so awesome.
The huge, you know, torch to start it and just the way that the wood was stacked so specifically and taking temperature measurements and dealing with the heat. And I got hooked. It was amazing. I just thought this is a beast, but I love it. So
that's fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so cool. Cause like I'm baking in a Scott oven now, right. And in my backyard and that's, it's So I know the thrill of getting used to the thing, and sort of then you're dancing the dance with the oven, you know?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And it just is like getting to know a person.
Yeah. Well, that's so great. I'm trying to track down Martin these days to get him on the show. And, because I met him at a guild class at SATE in Calgary.
Okay.
And then when I had Orange Boot, he came up, he had, a sister out in Regina. So he came out and, visited us one morning and hung out for a bit and that. So I've gotten to know him a little bit, over the years, eh? And, that's really neat that he kind of saw something in you to say, hey, you know, come work the oven. Let's give this a go.
It was perfect.
So neat. But and I can relate to the sort of going to school as an older woman, right? Because you get so many young kids just coming straight from school or straight from high school, not knowing what they want to do. And it's like, anytime you've got a little bit more, just a little more life experience on you, you know, it's going to have made going to baking school. Did it make it better? Like how was that?
Yeah. I think I have no regrets about doing the English degree first.
Yeah.
Because going to a university and learning just how to think critically and how to prioritize and how to write an effective, you know, just be able to put your thoughts down on paper effectively in an organized way. And there was some research and writing involved at VIU, and it helped me be sort of like a group leader and more calm. Like, I think that that's probably part of the reason that Martin looked at me and said, put her on the wood fire. Or Mr. B is, as I still think about him, but, so it was great, because I think I also had, I wouldn't say more confidence, but I was a bit more settled with myself.
Right.
So if something went sideways, I could see it as, it's a loaf of bread. It is a grade, but it's a loaf of bread too. And I'm learning, and that's okay. Whereas when you're right out of high school and there's that pressure that, like, to get it right.
Yeah.
I think it can be a little bit harder. So it was great that I had that. And then the English degree came in so handy, because when we did our trip to Europan Breadmasters, I was asked to write an article for the Bread Bakers Guild magazine, Breadlines.
Yep.
So that worked out really well too.
Yeah.
So it all kind of came full circle.
Yeah. I remember the article actually. That's cool. Yeah. Yeah. Cause I still am a member, and I was then. And that was one of the things that, I love about the program, at Vancouver Island University, is that they do that trip, over to Paris to check that out. I haven't even been there. I've been to Paris, but not for Europan. How was that experience for you?
It was completely overwhelming and one of the best things I could have done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it just gets you so out of your comfort zone.
Right.
And you see, you do see just how much you have to learn. Oh. Like in the best way possible. And it really challenged me, because when you show up there and you're watching these people who are so passionate about what they do, and they have so much knowledge, and they're standing there talking to you saying, I still have a ton to learn. And they've been in the industry for how long?
Yeah.
So much respect to the people who are competing, and even the people who are willing to stand in front of thousands of bakers and shape a baguette. I don't know if I would have the guts to do that, but it was just really humbling, and in the best way, because you're just surrounded by so much creativity and so much passion.
Yeah.
How could you not want that?
For sure. For sure. I have to imagine the support from everybody watching and learning with it has just got to lift everybody up. It's so, it's like whenever I go to a guild conference, which is on a smaller scale than the Coupe du Monde, but still it's just so, so empowering to see all of this and to be part of it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. As soon as everybody gets together, it amazes me what can get, what you can come away with it from.
Yeah. Well, and what's the trade show like? Did you go through that as well?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's all sort of, it's in one huge convention center.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to figure out your way through it. You know, that was kind of it depended on how you looked at it. And one of the chefs that we were, the teachers that we were there with, we were chatting with her because we were old enough to drink there. So not that right. Students can all go and drink. But one night we were in the hostel and we were having a chat with Chef Gower, and she's really amazing too. And she's in the culinary program there. And I think she's the head of the baking department now. But anyways, she was talking about it and I said, I'm looking at all of these products that are pre-made mixes and machines that are dropping macaron, you know, shells out and things like that. And it can be a little bit, because we're learning to do all of this from scratch. We're doing right. The pastry and the bread and all that stuff. And so you go to these huge trade shows and there's these ovens and these machines that are doing what we're learning.
Right.
So it was kind of intimidating and depressing almost because yep, you're seeing sure. This factory aspect to it.
Yeah.
And she kind of made a really good point. She said, there's a place for that.
Right.
But if that's not what you want to do, you don't have to. And so, but the point of coming here, the point of seeing this is so that you can decide what you do and you don't want to do.
Sure.
Like she said, like, this is the best way to get all of your options. And if you want to work, you know, in an industry where you're making bread from scratch with sourdough, if that's what you want to do, then you know that when you come here and you see that and you don't want to do this. So,
right. Right.
So it was kind of really nice that way.
Yeah.
Well, then it was very overwhelming though.
No, sure. Sure. And I can imagine that it might be a little bit discouraging when you're to just see like these massive bread lines and stuff that can be built. But, I don't know. I always think that there's a place for everything, like you said, especially if you're using good ingredients and stuff, then, you know, there's a place for it. Cause we can't feed everyone, shaping bread by hand necessarily, but
exactly,
but still I don't know, maybe, again, I've never been, I keep thinking maybe I'll go to IBIE down in Vegas or something like that too one day, but I get pretty intimidated because I'm not terribly mechanically inclined. So I always get intimidated by the big machines because I'm thinking like, what if that was mine and it broke, I'd be completely messed. I couldn't deal with it. Whereas,
yeah,
you know,
you'd be hooped.
if your peel breaks, you can figure something out, but,
exactly. Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, and then did you do, any bakery visits while you were over there?
Well, yeah. So the instructors are amazing and they make your bakery tours. So there's four different days and they give you a map and you go with your teacher. And so you do a whole bunch of tours and visits. And then we also got to go to a couple bakeries and actually go into the back.
Oh, nice.
And there was one, and the name escapes me now. But yeah, there's one that we got to go into and it was over 100 years old and the bakery is still in the basement. And, you know, we got to go down there in steps because it was such a small production space.
Sure.
But I just looked at, like, as soon as you go down there and you see those guys working, and it was mostly men in that bakery, I remember seeing it and being intimidated a bit, but they're just going so fast and it was so intense and it didn't matter that we were there. And I just loved it. I just thought, wow, these guys really know what they're doing and they're really confident in what they're doing. And I really like that. So it was really cool to see.
So cool. Yeah. When my wife and I were over in Paris about 3 years ago, I reached out to Martin and he sent me the maps. You know, so
did he?
Yeah, he did. And so I, one day when we were in Paris, we picked a neighborhood that seemed to have a high concentration of bakeries that he had marked out, or that you guys had marked out. And so we did that little walking tour, but I never got into the back of any of them. I was way too intimidated because, the bread bakeries were cool, but some of the fine pastry shops and that were like way beyond anything I had ever imagined before, you know, like these delicate little things that they had in the display cases. The stuff looked like jewelry more than food, but
oh yeah,
it was so
absolutely.
Cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was, it's definitely eye opening. If you want to head that way, like I did the pastry part of the program, but as soon as I walked into those shops, I was exactly like you. I was just like, this is not something I ever even considered.
Yeah.
Wild.
And I've got kind of sausage fingers when it comes to that kind of really fine stuff, like the guys that can do that and just make them look so brilliant. and not get prints on everything. It's like, good, you know, I have much admiration, but that's not me. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't put cocoa powder in brownies without turning myself a different color. So to be fair, I don't have huge aspirations for being a fine pastry chef, but.
Yeah. Yeah. For so cool. And so how long is the program all in over there?
So you do 10 months essentially in class. Okay. You do half of that in the pastry. So you do a level one bread and a level one pastry, and then a level two bread and a level two pastry. And you come out of that with essentially enough hours that it amounts to your first year of your apprenticeship training for your Red Seal.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. Cause Martin, that's another thing I'll get off of Martin and get back to you, but I do know he's a big proponent of Red Seal certification for bakers in Canada, which is pretty rare. Like that's not a normal thing. So it's always down the culinary side. You know, I know in Saskatchewan there's no such thing. You know, you pretty much have to go to Alberta to get it or something like that. But
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So after school, your second round of school. What was next for you?
So after that, I got a job the seemingly the random way that I get most of my jobs these days, through a guy who knows a guy.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. I had done, as part of the program, we do, you have to do like a work experience.
Right.
And I was really lucky. And Byron Fry from Fry's Red Meat Bakery in Victoria, he let me come for a week, and he's got a wood-fired oven, and I was already really attracted to the wood-fired ovens. I went there and he was great. And he said, you know what, you're awesome, but I'm sorry, I don't have a position right now. And totally fair to him. He was in a week. I learned so much there, sometimes even just standing around and watching.
Sure.
And he said, but I know this guy and he's built this wood-fired oven. But there's a catch. You're going to have to move to Saskatoon.
Okay.
So Byron had been in touch with Bryn at the night oven, and Bryn had by the time I got there built the oven and was open, had been open for a little while.
Okay.
And but he just needed a baker to help him out. So I thought, you know what? There's nothing holding me back, and there's nothing holding me in Alberta or BC. So I'll go for it. So yeah, I did.
Right on. And that's where I met you.
Yeah. That's where we were introduced.
For sure. Yeah. So cool. Yeah. Well, that's so neat. And Byron, you know, Byron's setup is pretty awesome as well, but different than what Bryn's got, and, you know, and different amount of time in it as well, you know, by the time, you know, when you were passing through both. So kind of cool.
Yeah.
Touch him for a bit. I'm always fascinated by the connections between bakers, you know.
I've gotten into a spider web now for me. Yeah.
Big time. Yeah. It's like, with everyone I talk to, you can trace this lineage, you know, Sheena's connected to Martin's, connected to Byron, connected to Bryn, you know, that kind of deal. So it's so cool.
Yeah.
So cool.
It's incredible.
Yeah. Well, and so tell me about the night oven experience in the early days there. Because you were kind of like the main bread baker, hey? Is that?
Yeah. There's always that tough point where you know way more about this than I would. Yeah. Because I always give full credit to people who are opening bakeries. Like, bakery owners are astounding and slightly crazy, to be fair. But Bryn was kind of at that point where there's so much to be doing on the pastry side, on the baking side, with a business, trying to keep front end staff. And so he just needed someone to run the oven and to run the bread and that kind of thing. And he took me on. We had two phone conversations, I think.
Wow.
And I moved there. So I didn't have a trial shift or anything. It was literally trial by fire, because I got there, you know, and 4 o'clock in the morning, he's standing in front of us fully blasting wood fired oven. So yeah. And he's taking on, like, at that point, yeah, I had been doing the work experience and the culinary school, or like baking school, but he was taking on a student for sure. So, I mean, he was a brave soul for that. So
yeah.
Yeah. So it was good, but yeah, I got to know the oven and Bryn has had a mill there.
Right.
Of some variety since he's opened. And, so learning to deal with, cause freshly milled flour we hadn't touched that at school. So
learning
to deal with that and learning to deal with like, cause there's that excellent, organic white flour from Saskatchewan we were using. And, so it was really nice and Bryn was really good. He gave me a lot of free rein to learn.
Cool.
He let me try new things with different flours and different ingredients I got to improve a lot in the 3 years that I was there.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and I know from the odd times that I would pop in and, you know, early enough in the day to catch you there or catch Bryn there that, you know, and even with my own place, like those first couple of years that you're open, there's so much change as you're figuring things out and with your production schedule and all your processes and that kind of thing. And you were right there in the thick of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always that learning moment because it being the first actual bakery that I worked in long term.
Yeah.
I didn't have a lot of other experiences to bring to it.
Yeah.
So it was really incredible. Anytime we tried to do like change a production schedule or change something like that, it felt like a really big deal. But once we got through a few of those where we started, you know, firing the oven at 9 at night instead of 3 in the morning,
right.
And, you know, retarding more doughs and doing things like that, it got a lot easier and a lot different. And a lot of things changed over that 3 years. When I think about when I first got there. It was huge change, but
yeah, which is, you know, I don't know, maybe with hindsight, it's like, wow, you know, we learned a lot, but I know when you're right in the middle of it, it can be pretty nerve wracking.
Oh yeah, for sure. No, it's you're just hoping something sellable comes out of that oven at the end of the morning.
Yeah, for sure. Cause it's, I didn't have the guts to do it. Like when I opened my place, and I had been baking in my Scott oven. There was just no way that I was going to build an oven in my production space and try and get that going. It was way too many variables for me.
Yeah.
I didn't have the guts. So I have a lot of respect for folks like Bryn and folks like you working with Bryn that it's like, okay, the doors are open and we're figuring this out and we're, you know, every day is an adventure, but we're going to get it done. Cause, you know, knowing the amount of, just the amount of complexity and the amount of mental energy it took to figure out my place and to figure out how we can be as efficient as possible, throwing the brick oven in there, right at the start would have been a really tough one for me, I think.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
There is even Bryn and I would say, like at certain points, as much as we loved the wood-fired oven and the principles behind it and, you know, sustainability and the idea that you're getting this beautiful bread out of something and that you can, we tried to use it as much as possible and be as efficient as possible with it. There is a true, true beauty in coming in and pushing a button.
Yeah.
And that oven is exactly the temperature that you want it to be.
Yeah.
And it's an even heat and you don't have to worry about moving the wood around and the ashes and all that stuff. You can just go. It is, there's a beauty to that.
Yeah. Well, and certainly, the working in a, like with my oven, when you could start cool and get hotter, it was a lot more predictable than even now going in the opposite direction. Right. So, because I remember you guys used to make, you know, some amazing looking challahs and that kind of stuff, you know, like the enriched doughs and all of that, that you're baking off in the brick oven. And, you know, once you get that thing hot, it takes so long for it to cool off, you know,
whereas
you go in reverse and you say, well, I'm just going to bake all that stuff at 350 and then I'm going to turn the temperature up and wait for half an hour and I'm going to bake stuff at 400, you know? And, you know, you just can't do that with a brick oven. It's, you know, you finally get it where it's nice and consistent and then it stays hot and you're like, what am I going to do?
Yeah. Well, and that's it, is that it's that game. I think that's why it's like getting to know that person. For me, it was like, okay, well, I'm also juggling this dough to make sure that the dough is at the proper proving point to be able to put in a right temperature. And the right temperature in the morning is going to be totally different on a Tuesday than on a Friday or on a Saturday morning. Because we used to do pizza, or they still do pizza nights on Friday nights there. The temperature would be over 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit on Friday night to try and cool that down so I could bake in it 5 hours later.
Yeah, it's like, thanks a lot, guys. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You came into work and it's sitting there at like 1,100 degrees and you're going, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
There's only so much mopping I can do.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. Well, even this past weekend for me, I had a really slow Saturday. And the oven had just come into its prime. And now instead of doing like 5 or 6 bakes like I normally do, I only have to do 3. And you're sitting there going, but I've got all this heat.
Heat? Yeah.
With all this heat.
Well,
I need the first couple loads to be full so that it'll start to, you know, take some of the heat out, right? Like, Oh, fun. It's a joy. It's a wonderful puzzle to figure out. I love it. You know.
Yeah. Well, and that's as soon as you can get to the point also where for Thanksgiving, those pumpkin pies, we'd use that residual heat to roast those pumpkins and like do as much as we could in it. But yeah, it was always a little bit heartbreaking when you're still sitting at, 400 degrees and you're thinking, we could keep going.
Yeah.
What else you got? What do you want to throw in?
Well, I'm really close to just saying, look, I'll roast off your chickens and stuff for your Saturday supper to come with you, right? Because I've got the heat. I may as well throw some birds in or something like that. Because use it up for sure.
Yeah, for sure. The energy there is just great.
Yeah. So cool. Well, then, so from Saskatoon, I guess. Mm-hmm. Then then did you immediately go from there overseas?
Yeah, actually I did.
How did that happen?
It was basically like, I think it just came to a point. I met a really good friend of mine working at the night of, and Hannah Regeer.
Okay.
And she's an absolute gem, and we're really, really good friends still. She came to visit me here actually. And she had gone to Vancouver to pastry school there. She was doing pastries at the Night Oven, but before that she had worked in Montreal and she had worked in France in Alsace. And so she's got a lot of knowledge, and she's very, very good at what she does. And we were chatting and she said, cause I was really close to getting my journeyman certificate or Red Seal certificate with the hours from the Night Oven. And I thought, she said, man, you've been here for 3 years. You need to go learn.
Yeah.
Like, it's nothing against the Night Oven, but it's just like, you have to, in this industry, you need to learn from lots of people. Yeah. And she was one of the people that really encouraged me. I was already really in love with traveling, obviously, from my prior trips, but she kind of just said, yeah, you have to go learn. And I had kind of already had the idea in my head, but it just turned out to be the perfect time to do it. And I was looking at places to go and trying to decide, do I try Australia? Do I try France? Cause they just have this huge bread history.
Sure.
And, you go Italy, what do I do? And then I kind of looked at Instagram, to be really honest.
Yep.
And I'm gonna, and to be stereotypical, I did. And I looked at the bakers that I was following and that were really inspiring me. And to be fair, bakeries online, you see the best part of them on Instagram, right? You don't see the chaos.
Yeah.
You see the perfect bread pictures, but
even the bad ones.
Ones,
beautiful. They're perfectly bad.
yes, they are. So I just kind of looked into it. And so the traveling visa that I'm on is called a youth travel visa, or in the UK, it's a tier 5 youth visa.
Okay.
And, in the UK, it's one of the only places that you can stay. You can get a 2-year visa off the bat and you can do it until you're 30. And I was 29.
Nice.
So I applied for the visa and I got the visa right before my 30th birthday, and they'll let you stay until you're 31.
Oh, wow.
If you get that 2-year visa. And so I thought, like, it's an English speaking country, at least, so I can go there and know my bread terminology, even though I can speak French quite well. I went to French immersion school. So,
oh, good for you.
Obviously that option, but, I didn't know a lot of bread terms. So I thought, and I was looking at the people who are working here, and I thought to myself, I really want to go somewhere where maybe there isn't that huge amount of bread tradition. I really liked the idea that the bakers here aren't bound by a whole bunch of rules.
Gotcha.
They're kind of wild cards, and I really like that. So I was looking at Haxby, and I was looking at, even Hoxton, which I didn't ever get to work at, but I really do admire what they're doing. And I went there and visited. So yeah, it was just amazing. So I got it and sent out emails with my resume, my CV. I tried to make a CV. I don't know how successful I was, but anyways, Philip Clayton emailed me back and said, "Do you want a job?"
And, nice.
And yeah, so I said, yeah. So sight unseen, no trial shift, he took me on.
Okay. And where was that?
So Phil owns and runs Haxby Bakehouse in York.
Okay.
In England. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Right on. And that I caught you there through Instagram, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So nice. That's sort of where I picked up. I have a little bit of distant relatives here, so they met me and drove me up there, and I went to Phil's, and he just, if he's amazing. Phil's great. He will talk bread with you for however long you can stand to do it. And he's just so welcoming, and he's so knowledgeable. He's been open over 10 years now.
Okay.
And, just one of the nicest, most generous people you'll ever meet. And so I really appreciate it. I got so lucky going to Phil's first.
Right on.
Yeah, he was great. And his bakers, working with Jim and Alex and everybody there, it was just, I was so lucky. So yeah, it was great.
And what kind of a bakery was that? Like, obviously a bread place, but was it like a retail place in the town, or were they
Getting
bread out? Or?
Technically Haxby's sort of like an outer village of York.
Got it. Okay.
And it's quite small. It is a little village, but so it's like they've got a coffee machine and they do retail from there.
Yeah.
But they don't really have any seats or anything currently. And then there's a little tiny bakery in the back that everybody is always shocked by how small it is
there. Okay.
And what Phil can push out of those ovens back there and the space that he has. And and then he's got an upstairs flour storage. So hauling 25 kilo bags of flour up those stairs is a memory that I will cherish because I never have to do it again.
Oh dear.
And so he's an absolute workhorse. He's amazing, those boys.
And so did you make like any traditional English products as well that come to mind, or is it more sort of what we would be used to here?
It wouldn't be what we were used to in Canada. So Phil does, he is amazing in that he tries to use a lot of local flour. He does use Shipton Mill, but he also tries to use a lot of Yorkshire grown and milled flour. And so he does a huge variety actually for the space that he has. And so he fools around with extractions and wholemeal loaves. He also does some yeasted loaves, but lots of it is sour.
Okay.
He does a wide variety of stuff, and he does the focaccias for lunch and ciabattas and everything like that. He's got a granary loaf and a white loaf yeasted and some seedy loaves and things like that. But I think that like you can tell that there are some loaves that he does really well, but they pay the bills sort of thing.
Gotcha.
And then he's got those loaves that he's really passionate about figuring out how to do them, as Bolken Brops and the, the wholemeal sours and things like that. And so it's always a little bit of an ever-changing variety.
Okay. For sure. Yeah. No, I was letting my Great British Bake Off take control of my imagination there, and I thought maybe those you know, boiled dough meat pies and all that.
he knew a butcher that did such a good job with that they brought those in.
Okay.
He does these similar buns, but I don't think those are actually British. And yeah, so there weren't too much. It was like scones, I think, were the most British thing, or scones. Gotcha. Don't get me started on which way to say it. But anyways, it was, there's no Bakewell tarts or anything really super British.
Yeah. Off
the top of my head, if Phil ever listens to this, he'll probably phone me. Why didn't you mention this? What were you thinking?
Yeah, but, cool.
Yeah.
And so, this is another ignorant question on my part. I'm sorry about this, but my understanding is that whole, real bread movement, like the hashtag real bread, is really kind of started in England. And was that a part of what you were involved with that at all when you were over there?
Yeah, in a way. So Phil is part of the what's called the Real Bread Campaign here.
Right on.
And so, yeah, the Real Bread Campaign is, I don't even think it's just in the UK, because there's bakeries in Ireland and all over that are part of it. It's a really interesting, just basically a movement to try to get people to obviously make and eat real bread and buy real bread, support bakers that are taking the time and doing it without additives and preservatives and all that. He's definitely a part of it. And it was part of what attracted me to the UK. And then as soon as I got there, it went so far beyond that, like just what Phil does. I think that the Real Bread campaign is great because they do make real bread formulas and instructions and like places to buy it. They make it very accessible for people.
Right on.
If they want to learn to make sourdough, they try and make that as accessible as possible. And that's really great. But Phil, just going to Phil's, going to Haxby, and looking at what they do and how much he puts into that bakery and how much he puts into the bread there just goes so far beyond a sticker on a door, if that makes sense. So the campaign is great. It is awesome. And actually, fun fact that Phil will appreciate that I mentioned is that on the cover of the Real Bread campaign, like cookbook or baking book, is a loaf that Phil made.
Nice.
So
cool.
Yeah, and it's a really nice loaf. So
right on.
So yeah.
And so
I was there for 8 months.
Eight months, okay.
Haxby.
And then where did you go from there?
One day at Haxby, a guy named John Casley had been visiting, and he has Wild Hearth Bakery up in Scotland.
Ah, okay.
In literally the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
It is. There's not a train station there or anything. It's just a little village.
Huh.
And, so I met John for, I think we exchanged about 5 words and it was cause he was in and out and chatted with Phil a lot. And I was kind of just doing my thing. And when I was looking for somewhere to move on to, I said, you know, I always tell the bakers that I'm working for, you know, I'm looking for something for 6 to 8 months or, whatever it is. And, so I said, do you need any help? I'll come and I'll do whatever for the time that I work there and, you know, try and help. I always want to make myself valuable while I'm there. Like, so I can contribute something to them too. I'm not just taking this knowledge or anything like that. I want to really contribute. So anyways, I got in touch with John and he said, yeah, come on up. So that was 5 months in Scotland and wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. What was it? What was that like?
So, I think it's common knowledge, but anyways, the Wild Hearth Bakery in the town where I was, staying up there, or the village, Wild Hearth is the village is Comrie, and, Wild Hearth is in a World War II, prison, like basically prison camp.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So they have this it was just outside of town. So I would walk down the highway to this prisoner of war camp where they had held a lot of Nazis.
Yeah.
During the war. And so you would go in there, and it was the eeriest feeling getting there. I kind of knew what I was getting into, but getting there, it was so strange. And we were looking for the right hut. There's all these Nissa huts. It just looks like somebody cut a whole bunch of tin cans in half and shoved them in the ground.
Oh my God.
And so we're going through, and a lot of it's abandoned. Yeah. And the town's bought this back from the government, and they're trying to turn it into small businesses and stuff. And so John started this bakery there, and that was where I met Matteo Serpi and Francesca Salvaggio. And wow, what a gift to meet them. I just pulled up and showed up there on a Tuesday, and Francesca was the only one there.
Okay.
And she's incredible. She did all of the sourdough vinoiserie there. The croissants were all sourdough.
Wow.
And she's amazing. It was the first place I've ever been. They're technically not croissants. They're cornetto or confetti.
Okay, got it.
But so it was a little bit of a different formula, but yeah, so she is incredible to learn from on the pastry side of things. She's amazing in her own right. And Matteo Il Panifico Brutto on Instagram, they might know him better that way, but he's just amazing with bread, and he's just so knowledgeable and so ready to share his knowledge.
Holy Diana.
He's great. He's in Australia right now, just touring around. He's working with Ian, and everything like that. So anyways, so just getting to work with them, getting to learn some Scottish flowers, because they were getting some different flowers from people up there. Andrew Whitley, Scotland, the bread flower. He's kind of starting that right now. So they were trying to figure out some loaves with that, and Mungos Wells, another miller up there, they were trying to get their flour in. So yeah, so they're always trying to be using local Scottish flours and make the best bread they can out of it. And they had, so at Phil's place in Haxby, he had like electric deck ovens, which I hadn't used other than in school. So that was insanity. But they're 50 years old, so it was amazing to try and use those ovens. And then I got to Wild Hearth, and as an effort to be more sustainable, they have a Bassanina that's wood-fired deck oven.
Yes.
So that was the first time I've ever used a wood-fired deck oven.
Oh, okay.
And that was just incredible. They use these kind of compressed wood blocks.
Yep.
And just getting to the hang of that,
yeah.
Firing an oven again, but to deal with the deck, because the deck, I could be wrong and I don't know the exact measurement, but I think they were 3 meters deep each deck.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
And so we had an auto loader and everything like that. And just the combination of a wood fired oven that had an auto loader, and it was that big, and it was amazing.
Wild. You know, I just talked to Paul McEwen, like Slow Rise on Gabriel Island. Take you right.
Oh
back.
Yeah. Yeah. Here.
And he put in a Bassanina oven 2 years ago, up in Gabriola.
How's he liking it?
He's loving it. He says it's
good.
It's a learning curve and stuff, but it's completely changed things for him. And he's using the compressed wood blocks as well, which he said is amazing, because they're just much more predictable, right?
Oh, for sure. They're very consistent. They're not wet. They're just like completely dry. And if they'd stop putting them in plastic packaging, you'd be really set.
Yeah. So cool. So how do people like that get to a tiny village in Scotland in a POW camp and start cranking bread out? Like, what? That sounds magical.
So John would be better at describing his history than myself, and he would be, along with Phil, great to talk to you on here. But so he's Australian originally.
Okay.
And moved to England and was working in London as a chef. He has a whole history before that, but yeah, and moved to Scotland with his wife, who's a teacher.
Wow.
And just kind of was looking for something to do there. And he had a micro bakery and everything.
Yeah.
And then he got a hold of Matteo and Francesca, I think on Instagram, but don't quote me on that.
Gotcha.
Anyways, yeah. He got in touch with them, and Mateo and Fra came over and literally helped him fit that bakery into that Nissa hut. Like,
wow.
They watched that because the guy who came over to build the Bassanina oven only spoke Italian. So how lucky was it that he had two Italian bakers there?
Oh my God.
And they watched that oven be built, and they developed those formulas with John over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Just like we were talking about with the night oven, like you just go through it and it's that process, figuring out the best way to do something. Wow. And just for your schedule and what you have to do. So yeah, so they started cranking it out there, and the products they made were just incredible. Like, I can't say enough about the bread and especially the pastries. Wow. They knew what they were doing.
And that's got to be going pretty far afield if he's just in a tiny village though, eh?
Yeah. So the delivery drivers there are complete champions. I don't know how they do it every day, but they do. They are driving a fair part of the day just to get the bread. So it's the first bakery that I worked at where we started at 7 in the morning, finished at, you know, 8 or 9 at night.
Yeah.
And then that bread would sit for a couple hours, and then the delivery drivers would come pack it and deliver it for morning. So, so it was the first kind of like day bakery I've ever worked at.
Sure.
I guess.
Sure. Neat. That's so cool. Oh man. Another fellow that I got to check out for sure. That's what an experience. That's so cool. And so then from there, did you go to Suffolk now or?
Yeah.
So or is there another one?
5 months there? No.
Wow.
Shockingly. I spent 5 months there, and then, I did a tour around Scotland a little bit to just see the place. Cause I'm traveling for the baking. Absolutely. And I love to do, I've done stages as well. Like I got to go up to Pollen Bakery in Manchester and visit people. And then, I came to Worcester. So another friend of Phil's, Will Worcester, is got a bakery here, and I seem to love to find spots where they're baking in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
So he's got a bakery. The windmill that his family has is in a little town called Bardwell.
Okay.
And they've turned that, the mill's not currently functioning to mill flour, but there are hopes one day. But the shop is at the windmill. So, but it's so small, and they did have the bakery in there for a long time, but it just was too small of a space. So now they just have the shop in there, and they've got the bakery in a commercial sort of retrofitted farm, basically. Yeah. Wow. So we do all the bread production there, and they do loads of markets around and have some wholesale production for some of the really nice restaurants around. And and same thing. He's trying to, you know, he uses some marriages flour and does some stuff that sort of pays the bills. But I've been really lucky that he's kind of let me have a little bit of free rein and in helping with stuff and learning so much from him. So
that's so great. You know, and it's like I'm trying to relate this back to my own experience running a place, and I always found that it's, well, we didn't have people like you just, you know, wandering through town for one. You know, like we had a couple, but it's sort of like once someone awesome came through the door, you know, I always figured my number one job was to make them stay. anything that I was legally able to do, I never did get to the point where, you know, your friend at Night Oven said, you know, you need to go and travel and learn, because I totally agree with that. But sort of as a desperate owner, it's sort of, please don't go anywhere.
But please don't do it.
Exactly. Like, I agree with you, but please stay. But
it's hard. It is. I guess that's why I always try and be, generally speaking, try to be really honest with everybody that I work with and for, and go into it saying, you know, my time here is limited. And like I said, I want to spend enough time here to contribute to what you're doing. Absolutely. I don't just want to take from you.
Yeah.
I want to be an employee and somebody that you can trust and things like that. I absolutely want to do that. partly because it is such a small community and your reputation is so important.
You betcha.
So I want to do that, but also because that means that I have the freedom also to say, but I'm probably going to be leaving in 8 months, or I'm probably going to be leaving in 5 months. And, and not because I don't love the bakeries that I've been working at, but because there's just,
it's a big world.
There's so many places I'd love to work. Yes. So, and to be a part of it.
And so, have you met any resistance with that pitch? Or it sounds like pretty much whoever you ask says, come on over.
Yeah. Well, I think that part of it helps is that I don't mind going to the middle of nowhere, obviously.
Sure.
Where it's, I'm not ever going to say that there's not good bakers in those places. There are, for sure. And yeah. I'm working with a lot of them, but it's hard to find people with experience who will go to those areas and, you know, say, yeah, I'd love to live in this tiny little town for 8 months and do this with you. But mostly people are pretty receptive to it because I'm really upfront about it.
Yeah. Well,
it's not too bad, but I've been offered to stay for sure. I've been offered.
Well, and even just saying that, Sheena, so. You know, just saying that it's like,
it's hard to turn those down.
Yeah. You are experienced, and that's the thing. And every step along the way, you know, whether it's, you know, school plus, you know, 3 years in Saskatoon plus all these other experiences, that's a different thing. Like it, and maybe that, and that's the problem is that that's the difference between, you know, you approaching these folks and the people that would come to Orange Boot, let's say, is the very best people that came and worked with us by and large had no experience before they came or were fresh out of school or something like that. So I never had the experience of someone with, you know, 3 years at one place plus three other bakeries, you know, and all of that experience that you've built up, you know, to then come in, it's a different equation for sure.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, and I feel for people like I was really lucky. I was really lucky that I didn't try and just like go from scratch at a bakery. I think I was really, really lucky and just sort of stumbled on BIU.
Yeah.
There was a magazine too that just said, get a little bit of schooling and then you're going to learn the most in a restaurant or in a bakery, but get some schooling first. And so it was perfect, a perfect amount of time. And you just got your basics and things like that. So that you could walk into somewhere and you spend the first few months just learning and participating. And then, but also then you feel pretty confident after a while, you can get some feedback and try and, like I said, contribute. Yeah. And bring knowledge, and that's awesome. That's the greatest.
Yeah.
When you can collaborate with somebody and they really appreciate that. I never want to step on any toes. You know, I'm going to places to learn from them. So I like to just keep my mouth shut and listen for a good portion of the beginning of it. But
yeah, no, I hear you.
Because there's so much knowledge there, and it's not even just about baking. If you just even to sit with, you know, Will and with Phil Clayton and have a beer and listen to their stories about starting a bakery. And I don't know if it's something that I want to do, but just to how much knowledge those people have, and you would have, of course, from going through that experience and that's why you're doing the podcast, obviously, but yeah, just to listen to these guys and where they've been and what they've done and to be able to, I kind of get to go around and I don't have to record it. So there's less pressure on me than there is on you. And like I said, I usually do it when there's beer involved, but just to chat with them and find out, you know, what they found the most challenging. And it's great to listen to, because Phil's been open 10 years. He's tried most of it.
He's
played the game long enough that he knows what doesn't work and why and things like that. So that's why when I got to go work somewhere where he's already got systems in place and he's figured out the best way in his space, in his town and his community to serve and to stay afloat and not just that, like it's really a big deal there. He does such a good job. He's very well respected. So just to learn from somebody like that is really great.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah. And it was a totally different experience than going into the night oven where we were building something and that was amazing.
Yes.
But to go into somewhere and go, this is how it works. It was almost like there's a lot of pressure that just comes right off of your shoulders because yeah. they've figured that out. They know, and you can just learn.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm working with I'm part of a startup company, nothing to do with baking at all, but that feeling you just totally described, that it's when you're figuring things out and you're just starting and you're building everything and you don't know what you're doing yet, it's a completely different type of pressure than, you know, coming in and trying to find your place in something that's been going 10 years, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So neat. So I did some quick math in my head while you were describing Scotland, and it sounds like you've got about 8 months left. Is that on your visa?
Yeah. Well, and 4 of those are already gone at Worcester's here.
So, okay. Okay.
So I have about, yeah, 4 or 5 months left on my visa right now, which I'll hang out at Worcester's because that was the agreement, and I'm having a really good time here. So.
Sure. And then what do you think, what's next for you? Where do you think you're going to head?
My parents would like to know that too. I'm so tempted. I'm so tempted. I'm going to go back to Canada for a little bit and just see my family, because I haven't been back at all since I came here.
Sure.
So I do want to go back there, but, and I do love Canada, and there's some excellent bakeries in Canada, but while I have the opportunity to take advantage of these youth travel visas, and since Canada is a Commonwealth country and we like to be friends with so many people, I can go work in a lot of places and learn. I think that where I go next, wherever it may be, Spain or Italy or France or Belgium or all that options, I really like to try and stay somewhere for a full year though, and really kind of dig in.
Yep.
I'm going to go home, I think, for about 6 months and just sort of get my head on straight, try and get a bakery job there. And, and same thing, I'll open and honest about it. Like, just see if somebody needs help for a while. So, and visit with family and reconnect, and then, and then keep traveling. I think, I mean, there's just so many places I want to go. Oh, we went to the UK. I went to the UK Grain Lab here. You probably heard about it.
Right.
Or might have. Anyways, it was in Nottingham. It was hosted by Small Food Bakery, Kimberly Bell. And she's incredible. Absolutely amazing. And Matteo and Francesca have kind of moved to Nottingham, and they were a part of it too. And they put on an amazing meeting. And I think 17 countries were represented in the baking industry. And it was only I could be wrong on the numbers, I think 140 people.
So nice.
So not huge, but not small either. It was incredible what they did there and what they put together. And John Reed from Redbeard Bakery was there in Australia. And, you know, and so just talking to all these bakers from all these different countries.
Yeah.
I just thought, I can't stay in Canada yet.
No, I got it.
You know, you talk to, and everybody's just doing such inspiring things with trying to get heritage grain and support farmers and millers and get a good community going. And I think that that's why the next place that I go, I'd really like to stay for a little bit longer, because I'm just realizing how much of amazing parts of the bakers that you can go and work for are such an amazing part of the community,
yes,
what they're doing. And it would just be great to be there and be part of that for a little while.
Oh man, that just sounds so amazing. You know, it really does.
It's so inspiring. And I think that that's why I like, kudos to you for interviewing all these people and for almost being at 50 episodes. Like, I like the information that I get from you and from the people you interview are just, it's incredible. But yeah, it just feels like there's so much to learn from all of these people.
Well,
Why wouldn't you keep going?
Yeah, for sure. Well, and you've really, I don't know, you've inspired me to get out of the studio here. That's for darn sure. It's been a few months since I've been on the road with my recording gear, but it's time to do it again.
Oh, for sure.
Seeing things firsthand is amazing. Hearing about it from you is just the best, but seeing it firsthand is a whole different level as well. So,
Oh, absolutely. It's a totally different, like we said, there's only so much that you can understand from an Instagram picture or something like that. And just being in a kitchen with the bakers that I've met has just been, it's been more than I could have ever hoped for. Just going on this wild, crazy trip for 2 years.
Yeah.
So I got already so much more than I ever thought I would.
So nice. Well, I don't want to put a damper on things, but I'm very, very curious because part of the reason I wanted to talk to you, other than to catch up and find out what you've been doing, is I'm trying to talk to more bakers and like bakery employees, to balance out all the chats that I'm having with owners, if that
makes
sense. And so, you know, hearing your story and traveling around and working with all these amazing people, like, is it a struggle to live, to just make a living, the way that you're doing? Like, are you doing okay?
That's a fair question. That's a fair question. Here's the thing. I guess there's a certain amount that I'm allowing myself to not have because I'm traveling, if that makes sense.
Yes.
I don't have a car.
Okay.
So I have a bike and I have a great boss who picks me up and drives me to and from the farm every day. And I've had really, really great people who have helped me out. And, you know, I travel around with two suitcases and a lot of baking books. Yep. But we won't get into that. I live on a pretty tight budget. I shop at the reduced section of the grocery store and try and take advantage of what I can. That having been said, the people that I work for have always been so incredibly generous with their time. And, but I think that it is a reality in the UK that, I've listened to your talks with lots of people and you've touched on this before, but it's just the bakery industry and the restaurant industry. It's a hard place to work. It's long hours and it's low pay. And if you're not working in a kitchen with people who are totally willing to be in the weeds with you or to be long hours and still laugh about things when they go wrong, you know, it's a really hard place to be. And so I think that part of it is like, no, I don't have a lot and I work pretty close to minimum wage, but like a living wage. I think I've always had. Everywhere I've worked, I'm at like the sort of a living wage.
Yeah.
In England, in Scotland. So that's been good. But it's not a lot, that's for sure. It's not a lot to live and travel on. So
yeah. And where are you staying when you go live at these places? Are you able to find like a studio apartment or something, or are you staying somewhere else?
I generally stay, the UK has, it's so small, right, that they have really good websites for like spare rooms.
Okay.
So furnished rooms and just have to find somebody who's okay with you waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning and that kind of thing. But yeah, so I generally just stay in a furnished room because then moving on is quite easy for me. And it's also nice to just have someone to chat with because, as much as I love all the guys that I've worked with, after I spend 14 hours in a bakery with them, I do not want to see them.
Yeah.
You know, you come home and it's just nice to chat with a girlfriend or that kind of thing. It's a great way to meet people. So I like to live with someone.
Okay.
I'm
going to get my daughter to listen to this part because she's actually moving to England in September.
Oh, no way.
She's going to be a school teacher. Just outside of London or, you know, it's all the big megalopolis there or whatever, but, sure. And she's looking for accommodations and that, and she's a little bit intimidated about, the shared, you know, having a roommate or something like that. And, but that idea of someone that's not doing what you do for a living that you can talk to, have a chat in the evening might not be a bad thing.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, London, to be fair, is a completely different beast.
Sure.
It is a lot. But if she's living on the outskirts of London, I think she's like, that's going to be amazing. Good for her. Like, just kudos to her to do it.
Yeah, for sure.
She's going to have a great time. But yeah, like if she needs anything, let me know. Cause okay. the bakers have always been the best, yeah. the most hospitable, helpful people. Awesome. But yeah, like for sure. If she's looking for roommates, I mean, hey, get somebody that does something totally different than you, because that's how you make a bigger network. Right. And more friends and learn more about the community. Cause that's the best part for me, is that I get to live with locals.
Yeah.
How many people who travel get to live with locals?
Right.
And see that part of it. I'm not staying in hotels or hostels like too much. When I travel short term, I stay in hostels. But yeah, it's so nice to be able to see Scotland. The Scottish people who live there are going to show you a totally different side of it. And that's the same thing with Suffolk and with York. That's the best part of it. So.
Right on. Right on. Wow. So... Man, I could talk to you for about 3 more days here, but I should let you get to bed. I think the other thing that I want to do is when Robin goes to England, I'm going to have to go and help her move now, because just the number of people that I want to talk to just after this chat, thank you for putting up with the time zone difference, but I should probably get on time for a little bit just to spread my wings a bit and talk to some more folks, but.
I fully encourage you to do that. And like, cause everybody's been so helpful for me. If you ever need anything that I can help you with over here, let me know.
Thanks. Yeah. Well, I got to say, Sheena, like my goodness, what an inspiring story, really. Like, when I first met you, kind of like, wow, here's someone with a lot of energy and really smart and that kind of thing. But I'm just so impressed with the journey that you're on. And the way that you're learning from people and meeting all these people and like you're something special for sure. And the coming out of this and continuing on with your next thing, like with all the experiences that you've got, like I can't wait to see what you do with all of this, for sure.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. That's really nice of you to say. Like I said, I feel like I'm learning from greats right now. So for me, I'm not in most of these people's league, but I really appreciate you saying that. It's been really nice just to chat with you and you have so much knowledge too. Thank you for sharing it with everybody on this podcast.
Oh, well, it's my pleasure for sure. I get a lot more out of it, I'll tell you. And that was Sheena. I hope it came across just how much I admire this young woman. She is something. So brave. I got to tell you, like when I was her age, I don't think there's ever been a point in my life where I would have just up stakes and, gone over to another country and said, I'm going to work here for a while and then... jump over to another place and jump over to another place and be upfront and honest about, hey, I'm here for the short term. I'm here to give. I'm not just here to take, but I'm not here for the long term. And I think that takes a lot of guts. And I think it sounds like it's rewarding for the employers that are bringing her on, and it's rewarding for her as well. And, I don't know that I had my head on straight when I owned my own place, that if Sheena would have came through the door and said, look, I'm only thinking of staying in town for 6 months, but I would love to work here and learn from you and also pull my own weight. I don't know if I would have said yes, and that would have been my loss for sure. So I'm glad to know Sheena, and I'm very glad to share her journey with all of you. If you're a baker, like I say, and you're thinking of trying this, give it a shot. And if you're a bakery owner and someone walks through the door with her energy and with her desire to learn and also to work hard, I hope you take a chance on them too. So that's the show for this week. Episode 50, by the way. Holy Dinah, I never thought, I dreamed we might do 50 shows. I never thought we really would. I'm so glad we did. And I got to tell you, we've got some amazing shows lined up for you in the future. We're not going anywhere. We're going to keep on doing this because I love it. And I love talking with these folks. and I love sharing the stories with you. So have a great week. Bake lots, feed the people. Happy baking. See you next week.